Radio Influence. The future is now.
You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. It's the offseason. We're still talking football. Draft is coming up. We have free agency coming up as well, so plenty of things to talk about. Before we start talking football, let's get into our title sponsor, Hess Spinal Centers. Hess Spinal Centers provides the best medical care for you and your family in this time of need. When there's a car accident, when you need treatment, when you need knowledge, go to Hess Spinal Centers. They have 16 locations in the Bay Area. 1-800-618-HESS. Don't stress. Call Hess. 1-800-618-HESS. Now, I do this show by myself sometimes. Sometimes I have a guest with me. Today, I brought this young man who has a world of knowledge, knows a lot, probably a lot more about the draft. Not probably. He knows a lot more about the draft than I do. Mr. Trevor Sikkema from Pewter Report. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm tired. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm doing a lot of grunt work these days.
You look like you're in the trenches here. You guys got a lot of stuff going on.
I certainly am in the trenches. Our dignitary headquarters is going through a metamorphosis. And the problem is when you're doing stuff, when you try to get other people to do stuff, they try to charge you lots of money for it. Therefore, I have to do a lot of things myself.
It's a good way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, either that or you go broke. One of the two.
One of the two. Yeah. And the second one's not an option.
Exactly,
so.
Exactly. Well, hard work has never been a problem, so I'm at it, and I'm grinding, and that is life. Now, let's get into this offseason. We're going to get into the draft in a little bit.
Sure.
Something I'm sure you've dug deep into. Let's get into free agency and what's happened. I'm going to tell you how it's happened for me.
Sure.
They've gone through their first wave of free agents. The Buccaneers brought in a couple plug-in type cats, defensive linemen. They brought in an offensive lineman at center. Before free agency started, I said the Bucs need two more defensive linemen and two more offensive linemen, and I think they can contend. That's what I said. After free agency was ended, I was a little dejected. I said, okay, they got some people, but I'm not sure if they got the right person. Mm-hmm. Then they signed JPP, Jason Pierre-Paul, and everything else looked better immediately. Did you see the same thing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So this was this JPP trade, as we kind of learned, this has been in the works for a little while, and we kind of talked with the Buccaneers general manager Jason Light about this when we were at the NFL owners meetings last week, and he was saying to us, you know, like, whether it was because they put in an offer to go get Robert Quinn. You know, I believe they put in an offer to go get Michael Bennett, but they did so unsuccessfully. And we were all kind of, you know, we kind of looked at this and was like, man, you know, if you really wanted him, why didn't you go get him? Mm-hmm. Well, now we know why. Jason kind of told us a little bit that this JPP thing has been in the works for a few months now, and he has known all along, man, If I go all in for Robert Quinn, I can't get JPP.
Correct.
And I'm sure there were other guys. You know, Tyrann Mathieu, he's a guy that's been linked to Jason Light a lot because of his time in Arizona. I'm sure there was interest there. We know there was a little bit at least. And it's like, man, if he goes and breaks the bank for Tyrann Mathieu, can't get JPP. All of a sudden, you know, and we talked about this a little bit. Like you said, when it was going on, even after they added the first couple guys, Vinnie Curry, Bo Allen, Unrein, Jensen, all those guys, it's like, all right, these are good guys. You didn't have a big emphasis.
Yeah.
But after the JPP thing, it's like, wow, yes, it took a little bit of luck for that to happen, but they had the right plan, and it worked for them.
Yeah.
So
I don't believe in luck. I think things happen for a reason.
Well, sure.
Jason Pierre-Paul, to me, is the best fit for me because, you know, USF, I love the way the kid plays. I mean, when he blew his hand up, I was the first person to say he's not going to come back and be a great football player. I mean, your hands are very, very important.
Right.
And I've watched him play quite a few times. And I'm the kind of person, I'm watching technique. His technique is impeccable. To have that hand, you know, at half, you know, half staff or half, you know, half the use of it, he's an amazing football player. His hand placement's amazing. His strength is amazing. He plays with unbelievable effort. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to rub off a little bit on the other players. I think as a defensive line, we're going to look completely different next year. And I think that's a good thing going into the season because we kept on coming back into the season, hoping for results, but really looking the same.
Yeah.
And this year we're going to be look completely different.
Yeah, yeah. I think you and I talked about that a little bit last time we were on the podcast, and then you were saying that it's just got to look totally, and it better look totally different. You know, they finished last in the NFL in sacks. Correct. So, and you know, to your point just about JPP when you were kind of raving about him a little bit there, I did a cover three column once he got traded, and I kind of went back and I looked at. I like to look at where guys are from, where they're, you know, how they grew up, mm-hmm. where they played college ball, or like any kind of different kind of coaching mentors they might have had. Jason Pierre-Paul has been the best athlete that he has ever been around mm-hmm. basically his entire life.
His whole life, yeah.
I mean, high school, he played basketball, and he was so athletic, explosive, strong, that he ended up, like, breaking his leg on, like, a crazy athletic dunk that he had
really?
When he was in high school. Because, like, that's just, like, the power that this guy sure. has. He was throwing it down so hard. Mm-hmm. He didn't even play football until his junior year of high school, and that's because the high school coach had to beg him to play.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, all of a sudden, a year later, he's basically getting scholarship looks from basically every school in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't go because of grades. Ends up going to two different JUCO schools, dominates both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, new coaching staff at both of them didn't matter. He had double-digit sacks both occasions. Obviously comes to USF, plays 1 year there, mm-hmm. is a huge part of that defense, gets drafted by the Giants 15th overall, and it's, you know, he played on special teams his first year, but then his second year in the league, he had 16 and a half sacks.
Jesus.
So it's like, it truly, and to your point, you know, so many other players in the NFL, when they lose part of their hand, especially playing DN, like you said, so much of his technique, you're done. Your career's done. And so for you to say you don't think he's going to be that good again, you were just betting on basically him not being a freak, but guess what? I guess, you know, he's a freak.
No, he's a freak. And he also has, something that isn't coachable. And he has something that gave me problems back in the day. Length.
Yes.
He's long as hell.
Yeah.
And when you talk about being an athlete, I think we all remember, and not a lot of people know this, maybe some in this neighborhood, but like I remember USF, they had the one video made me go, what the hell was him doing the handstand and walking on his hands?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a big dude to be walking on his hands.
Yep.
You know, little things like that make you think, he's a little bit different of
a
little bit of a freaky
athlete.
Yeah. But, you know, when you look at, you know, long athletes like that, you know, way back when I played, it was Neil Smith. Neil Smith was ridiculously long. Mm-hmm. You know, Bruce Smith was too. But it doesn't mean necessarily you're going to be a great football player. Javon Kearse was a guy that had length. I didn't think he played up to his potential.
Mm-hmm.
He had potential. I don't think he was there. But Jason Pierre-Paul has a motor, and that's uncoachable to me.
Yeah.
When I watch him, he's going hard all the time. Doesn't matter if he's backside, front side. And like I said, that's something that I believe this defensive line needs. And with this defense that we've talked about forever, and I've always asked, who on our defense knows what it looks like? And our answer now is going to be Jason Pierre-Paul. He's been on great defenses before.
Yep.
He played with Michael Strahan before.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Osi Umenyiora, Mathias Kiwanuka, all those guys.
Those guys were unblockable for a while.
Yeah.
He knows what it looks like. He knows the attitude.
He won the Super Bowl with those guys.
Exactly.
You know?
So we got our guy.
Yeah.
We got our guy in Jason Pierre-Paul. Now, the other two defensive linemen that came in, what do you know of them? From what I read of them, they're plugger-type guys. But you can't have too many good defensive linemen in the NFL.
And I think that's the motive of signing these guys. And when they kind of came on and the headlines come out and the articles come out, a lot of people are like, these guys, you know, like they're not sack guys. They look at their stats and it's like, okay, well, there's not a lot there. So where are they going to produce on the defensive line? But I think that these signings were more to your point, what you just said there. These are better defensive linemen than they had previously. And I think that they're just elevating the defensive line as a whole on a lot of different spots, hopefully making their strengths stronger, like giving one-on-ones more to Gerald McCoy and to Jason Pierre-Paul now and to Vinnie Curry and things, you know, those kind of things. So I think the two middle guys, Bo Allen and Mitch Unrein, are the guys that we're talking about. Unrein he's a guy who kind of has the size to play either 3-4 defensive end or I guess he could play a little bit of nose in a defensive tackle. But these guys, mainly, they got him there for the versatility. They want to be able to move him kind of wherever they can, basically on the interior, to put Gerald McCoy in the best spot that they can put him in, is why these guys are here. And I think that they're very much dirty work players. I mean, I think Clinton McDonald was a guy who now no longer on the team. He's with Denver. Clint McDonald was very much a dirty work player for the Bucks. I thought in his tenure here, that's what both these guys are. So I think, you know, they're losing they lost Clint McDonald and Chris Baker.
Yeah.
But they gained, I think, two guys who had the type of production and type of motor that Clint McDonald had. So I think it's kind of a win-win for him.
Well, I mean, I think everybody's going to see that it doesn't matter who you have at nose guard or who you have at end. Joe McCoy's job is going to be exactly the same. It's not, nothing's going to change. He's going to, you know, people talk about double teams a lot. And I, who was I talking to? I was talking to some Chidi Ahanotu who was sitting right there, and we did the last podcast. And we were talking about double teams. You know, there's never really a double team in football. And I've never, unless you're on goal line, you double team somebody. Everybody's accountable for somebody.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So you might slide to a linebacker.
Yeah, because he's there.
It may look like double team, but you're just kind of going through the lineman to a linebacker. You know, doesn't matter if you have Warren Sapp at nose guard. You still have to block it the same. Now, it does change when you have a beast at nose guard, because now maybe the center has to slow down a little bit and slow down the nose guard as he goes to the three technique. I don't know if any of the guys you got that we brought in are those guys. So it's going to be the same. I thought Clint McDonald was out of position. I thought he was a three technique.
Size-wise,
Well, I thought when he came in and played for Gerald, I thought he played really well. I didn't think he was a nose guard. But obviously, Gerald McCoy, that's his position, so they're not going to move him over. Now, I allow people to email me if they have any questions. If you want to give me a, you know, give me a question, it's ianbeckles@radioinfluence.com. This question is basically, they're asking, do players in the meeting rooms hold their teammates accountable? And he's bringing up Gerald McCoy and really JPP and, you know, is he going to be able to pull him aside and all these things? You know, accountability in football is something that's really built in, okay? No, and I think people think leadership is calling somebody out in a meeting or calling somebody out in the locker room. It never happens. I've never seen a player call out another player. Well, not often anyways. It doesn't happen very often. You know, you have to watch when you think you're a leader and you call somebody out in meetings. You got to watch yourself now, because we got 17 weeks of film. You're going to play poorly.
Right, yeah.
Okay, you see what I'm saying? So so if the guy beside me struggles, the coaches are going to let them know. Okay, they're not going to get away with it. You know, so the question was, is anybody going to hold Gerald McCoy accountable when he's not in the right gap? That's the coach's job. JPP is not going to say anything, nor should he. You know, I've been in the locker room with a lot of different leaders before. Leaders are made Monday in film when you put the film on and you look at it, you go, God damn, that dude knows exactly where to be. That dude is playing hard every snap. And that to me is leadership. All the rest of it, blah, 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 talking. I don't care for it. To me, leadership is a guy who's on the field all the time, a guy who practices hard all the time, and to me, that's leadership.
It's more of a respect thing than a vocal thing, right?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. You know, you look like somebody like Paul Gruber, who I played with for 7 years. Paul didn't say five words to me. Not five words, period. He didn't say five words to anybody. But I learned a lot from him. You know, as I'm a rookie, and I'm looking over, and Paul's just writing note after note after note after note. I'm like, what the hell can he possibly be writing? And then I look at him after practice and he's watching film. I'm like, what? This is, how much film are you going to watch? And says a rookie. And I'm like, this is crazy. You don't need to watch that much film. And then when I'm in my eighth, ninth year, I was that guy. And I learned it from Paul.
Sure.
You realize that there's so many situations in football and you got to be ready for every single situation. So I think Jason Pierre-Paul brings an attitude. I think he's going to be beloved by the fans. I think he already is.
Yeah.
And to me, getting on the field with a little bit of swag is going to be very important, because you know, how long have you been a Buccaneer fan?
Well, I'm from here, so basically my whole life, you know?
Your whole life. It's been a long time since I've looked on that defense and I saw swag. It's been a long time, so I'm hoping JPP brings that.
And to a couple of the other signings, too, both Bo Allen and Vinny Curry came from Philadelphia, and you know, I've been looking up, reading up on those guys, listening to how they talk about, because some of the media questions have been, you know, what was it like in that locker room? You guys just won a Super Bowl, that kind of stuff. And the thing that stands out to me, yes, they built the team around him, but one, the environment that Coach Doug Peterson put around them, And two, the players just accepting it. And the way that they talked about just being on the team with each other, mm-hmm. and how they played for each other, the relationships they had, the focus, and then again, the confidence, the fun, the swagger. Eventually, at the end of by the time they got to the end of the year, they were like, we can beat anyone.
Anybody.
And they went out and mm-hmm. they did beat mm-hmm. everyone. Mm-hmm. And so that is the biggest thing that I'm with you mm-hmm. has been missing from the Tampa Bay culture. Over the years, they've had some talent.
Sure.
I mean, you know, people can argue not as much as they've needed to. GM misses, coach misses, whatever. You draft misses, whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. But there's been talent on this team. There's never been over the last decade, what I saw in Philadelphia this year and what I hear from the guys that came from Philadelphia. Mm. I've never heard that out of anybody's mouth in Tampa.
Been a long time. And if you know, once again, talking to Chidi last week, one thing you remember back when the Buccaneers were great, and that was, you know, 02 and till 96 to 02.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most important thing that happened for the Buccaneers. They bought in. That's the most important thing. You can have great football players, but if they're all doing their own thing,
right,
it doesn't work.
100%.
Last year, tell me if you didn't hear this. We're running too many stunts.
Yeah.
Heard it often, right?
Yeah.
You know what? You ever hear anybody tell Rod Marinelli you're running too many stunts? Or Tony Dungy you're running too many stunts? Never. I never heard it. And those were Hall of Famers. And you know what? If you run a stunt, run it the right way mm-hmm. and run it effectively.
Mm-hmm.
As an offensive lineman, if you're running stunts the right way, it's almost impossible to pick up. I'm telling you. You're just running the stunt the wrong way. Period. I watched Warren Sapp, knowing Warren Sapp's one of the best three technique rushers ever, run a stunt and give himself up so that Chidi Ahanotu or Simeon Rice or somebody could come around and get a sack.
Mm-hmm.
That's being selfless. I don't know if we have a lot of selfless. I don't know if we had a lot of selfless. And you look at the teams like the Eagles, defensively, they weren't that damn talented, but they played hard as hell.
Right. They had good players, but I mean,
sure.
You know.
They weren't that great.
Right. They weren't the way that they played at the end of the year, especially going into the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
just now, like you said, the freight bought in. That is the thing that Bo Allen and Vinny Curry both said. Mm-hmm. Was really like the underlying theme of it. Everybody bought in. Whether you were the nickel corner, whether you were the box safety, the situational edge rusher, the space eater, whatever you mm-hmm. were, you were that
yeah.
at your all. And that is something that I have noticed over the last couple of years more than any other. And, you know, I'm relatively new to covering football full-time as a profession, but coaching and setting up a culture to where you get talent to believe in mm-hmm. a team. It's such a big deal.
Absolutely.
It's such a big deal.
No doubt. Like, when Tony Dungy got here in 96, he came in, and I've never seen somebody more by the book. And when I mean the book, I don't mean the Bible. Although he is the
although,
most.
Yeah, probably
although
both.
He is the
yeah.
most by that I've ever seen as well.
Yeah.
The most. Because, you know, I'm not a religious person, but whatever he's doing, I get.
Yeah,
okay?
Sure.
Everybody else, I'm not sure what they're doing. But Tony Dungy came in, and he said, guys, we are going to win, and we're going to win when we do this. And he was 100% right. He goes, we're going to run. We're going to win when we can run the football, take care of the football, not make bonehead mistakes. It's okay to punt the football. Defensively, we have to be in the right gaps. We have to play hard. We have to run through the football. He goes, we have to get after the passer. Just simple things. As we were progressing throughout that year, I think we started off 1-5, maybe something like that. So Tony Dungy would come in on Monday, and he would put film on, and he'll go, these are the plays that are stopping us from winning. And he would show the plays, and it's exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Guys not going, you know, not running to the football. I don't see that with the Buccaneers. Like, when you see a swarming defense, you go, God damn, these guys are like you're hitting them like BBs.
Yep.
I don't really see that defensively.
Yep.
These Eagle players, I guarantee, have that mentality, and they're going to bring it here with them, no doubt. Jason Pierre-Paul has seen it. He's been there. And I guarantee they're going to rub off on these players, no doubt about that. So defensively, when you bring Jason Pierre-Paul in and Curry and all these guys in, now all of a sudden, if you implement a pass rush, even to the talent we had last year, you know how much better that makes Vernon Hargraves? And we're going to talk about Vernon Hargraves in a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know how much better it makes Vernon Hargraves when you have a pass rusher?
Oh, yeah.
It makes them 10 times better.
Mark Cook always says you could have three Deion Sanders back there, but if you can't get to the quarterback, he'll eventually lose his guy.
I don't know about that. That might be the only exception.
He's a Knoll, I let that quote be what it is.
Yeah, well, I played against Deion Sanders, and I would say that's the case for anybody on the earth ever.
Other than
for him.
Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was that good.
I'll tell him to switch the analogy.
He was that good.
Well.
I mean, I'm not a Knoll, but when I watch film, I love giving this analogy. Like, John Gruden never really talked good about anybody. Never. We played the Giants one game and he disrobed Jason Sehorn. He goes, he can't cover me. We're going to go after him all day. And we did, and we crushed Jason Sehorn. I think it was a year after he made the Pro Bowl. I'm telling you, couldn't cover nobody on film. I'm telling you. Then we played the Atlanta Falcons. And John Gruden walked up and he had a big screen up there and he put the defense on. And he put a box over from the nose guard over. And he goes, we won't throw the ball here. And I was like, what? He goes, we're not going to throw the ball on this side of the box. I was like, we're not going to throw on the whole left side of the field. He goes, and I didn't ask him, but we're not throwing it here. So our whole game plan was to throw it right. We did not, with Bobby Hoying as quarterback, we did not throw it left at all. Because if Deion Sanders was 15 yards from the ball, it's interception, I'm telling you. That you should watch on film, dude. He would be in dude's pocket all game long, and then Gruden goes, "Watch this play," and he goes, "Look at him," and he stops it. And the whole game, they didn't go to Deion's way. So before the snap, he's on his knee. He's on his knee.
Deion Sanders is?
Yeah. So he's like he's goading you to throw the ball over there.
Yeah.
And then he would do this. He would let the receiver be open.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Till you let that ball go, and then. And you would see us, and I was like, God damn. And then he got an interception. We played in, like, I think Fulton County, something, one of the old stadiums. He got an interception, and I was known to get tackles. I got a bunch of tackles every year. I mean, I was a defensive player growing up, and I saw him, and he was 70 yards away. And I go, I'm going to get this son of a bitch. So I take a quick look around, swivel, and then I start running. Then I look up, and he's already high-stepping and with his hand behind his head, and I go, he just moves 60 yards in 1 second.
Yeah.
I've never seen a player that fast, so he might be the only exception.
Okay, all right.
But a pass rush makes everybody on the football field better. It makes calling defenses easier. You know, when you're calling a defense and you can't get there with four players, that's a tough situation when you got to blitz all the time, and we don't really have blitzing-type linebackers. So everybody on our defense got better immediately, and I swear I was ready to scratch my eyes out until they got Jason Pierre-Paul, and I was like, wow. So, you know, big ups to Jason Light for rectifying that whole thing that looked like an abortion earlier, unfortunately. But I'm really happy with how the off-seasons went so far.
No, I think you've got to be happy. They had the money. They locked up a couple of the guys that they needed to lock up, obviously, and then getting the right guys. And I think that was the big deal. And like you said, I think guys who could be culture-changing people are part of that. So that's part of that right guy, not just that mentality there. No, but I'm with you. I think it's been a good offseason so far.
Now, draft is coming up. You guys have big plans for the draft?
Yeah, we're doing so last year, this was kind of, I don't want to say last minute, but it was almost like people care about the draft so much, we just do a live cast, and so we go live from One Buck Place, and we basically just do a YouTube live through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're a big fan of the draft, you want to pop in, and we watch the draft with everybody. We give our thoughts, and we listen to the chat. We talk to people and interact there. So it's basically just a live draft interaction weekend thing with everybody. And that's what we did last year. I think that's what we're doing this year, too.
Well, I mean, the great Jill Hobbs invited me to the draft party.
Oh, over at... okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not gonna make it. I'm not a draft guy. I swear to God. I mean, I'll go back and I'll peek at it a little bit. Even when I was in the draft, it was hard for me to watch it. It's just so long and drawn out, and they're talking about players I've never heard of before. And then you know,
I figure if you're in the draft, they're starting to talk about players you know you're better than.
That's a fact.
So
okay,
I mean,
well, that's a.
I just get pissed off.
No, I was pissed off. Okay, was but you know, when I was in the draft, there was 12 rounds. I end up going.
Okay, that's too long. I'm a draft nut, and that's too long.
Well, I don't think it is.
12?
Well, it's too long to watch.
You told me you don't like rookies.
No, I don't like rookies, but they still end up being free agents anyway.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
I think players like to say they got drafted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it all turns out the same. But when I was drafted, they didn't have – they only had, like, the first couple rounds the first day. I'm not sure what they had on television, but my agent was like, yeah, the draft is over. So I went bass fishing, caught a bunch of bass, was happy with myself, came back home, and my roommate was like, you know, Buccaneers called. And I'm like, why would they call? Draft's over. He goes, I don't know what they called. So I'm like, hello, it's Ray Perkins. Yeah, we picked you in the fifth round. We're going to have a mini camp in 2 days. We'll see you in 2 days. That was it. But sitting there watching the draft, even today, it's to me, it's boring. Okay, maybe because I've been through it. But like I said, even when I was in the draft, it was hard for me to watch. You know, it's a reason to drink, I guess, which everything else in the world is becoming. Now, seventh pick in the draft. I hate rookies. I've told you that before.
You have.
But it would be nice to get somebody that's going to make some sort of an impact his rookie year. That's a hard thing to do in the NFL, mm-hmm. okay? And it's you don't really want to be in a situation where you have to have a rookie make an impact. But where do you think the Buccaneers are with that seventh pick? Do you think they're to the point where it's the best available, or should they still be going after position at number seven?
No, I mean, obviously it's a little bit of a mixture of both, but I think part of what makes what they did in free agency a success, as we talked about, is for the most part, it is best player available. Because I think that they still have allowed themselves to say Bradley Chubb or Quentin Nelson, one of the two, somehow gets to seven. I think those are one and two on their board. I think Chubb's probably number one still on their board. Quentin Nelson would be two. They've allowed themselves to be able to pick those guys and get away with it. You know, a lot of people are screaming, hey, defensive back, this and that. But I still think that they've given themselves a chance to pick both of those guys. Running back, they could go. I know they really like Saquon Barkley. I don't love picking a running back that high. I know they have thought about it. But
he won't be there.
Huh?
He won't be there.
I wonder if he'll be there.
I think there's so much hype with him. I think he's a great football player. What I see is 1.5 years of great football and then a hamstring. That's what I see.
Oh, from Saquon?
He runs too hard. You can't run like that in the NFL. Nobody does. Nope. You can't name me one running back in the NFL, young, that runs that way. They don't. You have to run like Le'Veon Bell now. You can't take licks like that.
Oh, sure.
Even Leonard Fournette. He runs hard. Mm-hmm. How many games did he miss last year?
Well, yeah, he had injury problems at LSU. That was a knock on him.
You think he's going to have a long career? I just wouldn't.
But how long do you need to run? This is to my point of picking a running back high. They cycle through him anyways so quickly in the NFL.
Thank you.
You know, like, I'm not. It's rare that you get a running back. People say, like, a franchise running back. It's like, okay, these guys get hit every single time they touch the ball. Mm-hmm. So how long are they really lasting?
They don't exist anymore.
So, like, yeah. I don't. Right. When I pick a running back, when you say, okay, year and a half and a hamstring, all right, that's obviously not ideal. But rookie contract, 4 years. Mm-hmm. If I get 4 years out of a running back, okay.
But you're thinking about it that way. I'm thinking about it this way. I could pick a running back and get 1.5 great years and, you know, or I could pick an offensive lineman and have him for 10 years.
Oh, right. You no, that, yeah, that's totally, and that's why I don't love picking running backs in the first round anyways.
I wouldn't.
Every year the draft class is going to get, I don't know about better, but every either year or other year, the running back class is just going to be stacked because it's how it is.
Yeah,
when you get kids who are athletes, when they're younger, the best, biggest, strongest athletes, if they're playing offense, you play them at running back. And that's just the way that it is. And then they grow up to be running backs. They go D1. That's just where football is going.
No doubt.
So that's why Bucks fans are clamoring for a running back, and a lot of them are clamoring for Saquon Barkley. We've done some polls, and people love Saquon Barkley. Mm-hmm. And it's like, look, man, I'm not picking a running back at seven. I'm just not going to do it.
He's sexy.
He's
a sexy
pick. In theory, sure. Yeah. You know?
He's an amazing running back. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
He does some freaky, freaky things. That's for sure. I just don't know if there's really many running backs even right in the league now that are difference makers anymore. There's not. Okay, how many running backs would you put in the category of difference maker? Le'Veon Bell. Give me another one.
I think Le'Veon, Ezekiel Elliott, and David Johnson. About it.
David Johnson missed the whole last year.
Well, right. That's the thing.
So then you got to take him off the list.
Well, okay. So and
he
that's
may not
another
be
thing
ever
with
be the
back.
Same again.
You know, like Dalvin Cook. I thought Dalvin Cook's phenomenal. He blows out his knee. Okay, there you go.
Now what?
Right.
Now what? Now he missed last season. He won't be the same this season. Nobody ever is.
Right.
And nobody's ever the same.
You play hurt in the NFL all the time. So, yes. Like, if you've got a high ankle sprain, you're normally coming back from it maybe 2 weeks early. So then you're just running on a hurt ankle. Yeah. Then all of a sudden it becomes degenerative because you're just running on it because there's no mercy on it. And then the offseason comes around, you get surgery. Then you got off surgery. You know, that's why running backs, these kids are hella talented. It's great, but I'm trying to build the best football team I can, you know?
Correct. Everybody thought Jerry Jones was crazy when he went and he kept on drafting those offensive linemen. Oh, you're crazy.
That's how you do it.
Well, you know what? You could put just about anybody behind them cats.
That's why
and,
you do it.
I mean, you know, Ezekiel Elliott is a special running back. He's one of very few. Mm-hmm. And when he's healthy, he definitely is special. But that last year was his second year. That was it. So we got to see. He looks like he's different than the others. I don't know. It's still very, very early. Now, you got to see once they, because they're going to get banged up. He hasn't even been banged up yet, I don't think.
Yeah.
When he gets banged up, then all of a sudden, let's see how they react. Let's see, you know, there's so many guys that come out and they, oh my God, he's amazing. Look at Dalvin Cook or the kid from Kansas City, young kid they had last year.
Kareem Hunt.
Yeah. Oh my God, people were putting him in the Hall of Fame. After the first four games, yeah. this guy's going to the Hall of Fame. I go, are you kidding me? What did he do to the back end of the year?
Right.
Nothing?
Right.
He fizzled right to the end of the year.
Yeah.
So running backs you can have.
Yeah.
Offensive line. Who was a center that they brought in?
Ryan Jensen.
Don't know much about him. What I'm happy about is that they're putting Ali Marpet back to guard.
That should be the plan.
Last year when they did that, and I started my podcast right about that time, and my sentiment about the whole thing was, I said, why do you want to take a Pro Bowl guard and change him?
See, here's the thing. And people talk about this too. And Ali Marpet, so they're moving him back to guard, but they're not moving him back to right guard. They're moving him to left guard. And the reason why they're doing that is because they want to see if they can still get the most out of J.R. Sweezy on the right side. And the Buccaneers have a bad tendency of trying to take players who are really good or elite and making them lesser or having a risk on them to make up for weaknesses instead of just straight up cutting the weaknesses.
Yeah.
They have a bad tendency of doing that, and that's not what good football teams do. And I get that you invest in a guy, I get that his contract's there, but, you know, I mean, Sweezy's coming off back surgery and then a bad year, and you're giving him, and he's taking up $5.5 million of the cap. Come on.
Well, that's not a lot of money anymore.
But it can be in different positions. You know, if you cut him... Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the safety market. They still need a safety. Mm. Basically, the entire safety market is sitting out there for less than $5.5 million, and they can get a straight-up starting strong safety.
But this is the thing, though. If you cut J.R. Sweezy, then you're less one offensive lineman, then you got to go get an offensive lineman.
Well, that's true.
And that's tough.
I hope their strategy in all this is we're letting ourselves be open to picking Quentin Nelson or maybe another stud offensive lineman to where then we don't have a problem getting rid of Sweezy. You know,
sure.
I just don't want them to go in the draft and be like, well, we could have this good offensive lineman, but Sweezy's still on the team.
I don't think that's the situation. But for me,
it has been in years past.
Sure. Sweezy, to me, you have to have this, the mentality that he did struggle last year, but he was 1 year removed from back surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's 2 years removed now. That should be better. Your first year back from any surgery is a son of a bitch. And I couldn't imagine having a back surgery.
I
couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
He had to go through last year and get reacquainted with his body, and he didn't. He was getting bull rushed a lot, getting overpowered quite a bit, and I don't think that's the way he played when he was in New Orleans. Seattle.
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, if you talk about, you know, moving people around, DeMar Dotson's a left tackle.
You think?
Yes, I really do. Like, DeMar Dotson has the feet, has a pass pro of a left tackle. A right tackle, to me, is a mauling, grinding type dude that moves, you know, that can move somebody off the ball. That's not DeMar. DeMar is 6'9". He's lanky.
Mm-hmm.
DeMar came in the other day. He looks like a basketball player.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen him in the offseason?
No, we saw him a couple weeks ago. We did a podcast.
Yeah, he's lost 30 pounds, I think.
Dude is, yeah.
No, he looks like a basketball player.
He does.
So to me, that looks like a left tackle to me. I don't know if he can do it or not. Donovan Smith, I've seen enough.
You think he can play guard?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what do you think about moving DeMar to left, having Ali at right guard, Donovan Smith at left guard, Ryan Jensen's at center, and you're drafting a tackle at 7?
It's a lot of movement.
You're an O-line guy. That's why I asked you, you know?
I mean, I all the individual moves are okay, but all of them together makes it tough.
All right.
Now all of a sudden you have A whole offensive line has never played with each other before.
Sure.
Okay, then nobody's ever played beside. And you know what? That's not that big deal if you have veteran players. Like, for instance, when I went to Philadelphia, I got there, Richard Cooper was next to me. I remember him from when he played at New Orleans. Mm-hmm. We hit it off. We played again. It just worked. You know, it just worked.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work that way.
It's fair.
But having knowledge of somebody, having played beside them, goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
It really does, because you know there was times where I played next to somebody, and we both knew what each other was going to do. Just,
well, that's chemistry, right? No, I mean, that's what you got to have for O-line.
Absolutely. And then the other end of the spectrum, you know, I'm playing beside Charles McCray in his rookie year,
mm-hmm.
and I'm having to tell him what to do on the line. When I'm on the line, I have enough to do myself. Forget about telling somebody what to do, and now the defensive lineman's looking at you, hearing what's happening.
Yeah.
They're dumb, but they're not stupid, the D-line, okay? seriously. And it comes to a point where they hear calls all day long. You know, I played beside Tony Mayberry for 7 years. We stopped making calls. Why? I know what the call is. You know what the call is. So we don't have to make the call. We're fine. Brad Culpepper knows our calls, all right? He knows all of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you say ace, he knows the uncovered guard is coming down with the center. So he'll just shoot into me because that makes sense. Why would you get double teamed when you can just shoot into the guard? So we're not going to make that call. But you can only do that if everybody on the line knows what the hell they're doing.
Sure.
And that comes from, you know, years and years of playing together.
Mm-hmm.
So draft, first, number 7. If I'm Jason Light, I trade down.
He said that is an option. Yeah.
I think it always has to be an option for almost any team. If you look to see the way the New England Patriots are built, Belichick will trade down in a heartbeat because the 7th pick isn't necessarily going to be better than the 12th pick. It isn't necessarily going to be better than the 19th pick or the 25th pick. Or the 4th pick in the 2nd round. This is real talk.
Right.
Like, we don't know if the 7th pick in the draft is going to be better than the 4th pick in the 2nd round or the 4th pick in the 3rd round. And we can go back to drafts and look. Like, say, for instance, my draft. I got drafted in the 5th round. Keith McCants was the 4th pick in the draft. All right? I don't know if Keith had 5 sacks in his career. I don't know if Keith played 2 good games in his career. Tony Mayberry was 4th round that year. Tony started 9 straight years for the Buccaneers, never missed a game. I played 9 years in the league. So when people look back at drafts and they go, well, 1990 was a bust of a draft because we drafted Keith McCants. Well, you got 2 9-year starters at 4th and 5th round.
Mm-hmm.
Reggie Cobb had a nice career.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to understand the importance of draft rounds 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right.
And free agents. There's free agents in the Hall of Fame because I've always said there's no more inexact science than picking an NFL football player.
Oh, there's, yeah. And I mean,
seriously.
You know, I love the draft. I love all the work that goes into it. You know, the scouting, the players, the traits, the this and the that. But, you know, I tell people whenever this comes up, we can scout a guy from when he was born.
Sure.
We could scout the traits from when he was born to the day he gets drafted. But the truth of the matter is, who he is upstairs and how he reacts to his coaching staff and his environment, there are so many elements that you just cannot scout.
Correct.
And you want to control. You want to be able to control as much as you can. Mm-hmm. Set up a culture. Know the guys that work in the culture. Do your research on who guys are, mm-hmm. Personality-wise, you know, what they're like upstairs. They're smart, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You want to do as much research as you can, but honestly,
it's impossible.
There will always, always be an unknown.
Well, there's another unknown that people don't really think about. I'm going to give you, for instance, Vinny Testaverde, who got drafted here in 88, I believe.
Something.
Somewhere 80s. Around there, 87, 88. First pick overall in the draft. Never had any success here in Tampa. Barely any. You know, his offensive coordinator was Ray Perkins his first 4 years. Ray Perkins' offense was almost more elementary than my offense was in college.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't teach Vinny anything. So Vinny didn't have success, but you can say it's all Vinny. But if Vinny had John Gruden or Bill Walsh or somebody like that, think of how much more advanced he would be as a quarterback, sure, and as an athlete.
Yeah.
when I was in Philadelphia and when John Gruden was our offensive coordinator, I'll never forget when he said Beckles, and I said, yeah. He goes, what coverage is this? I was like, two. He goes, all right. What do you know about cover two? I'm like, nothing. And he starts laughing. He goes, let's start to learn. And he just broke it down to where he had offensive linemen adjusting, pass protection. He goes, why would you slide to that guy? Can that guy come? No. Then why would you slide to him? I go, doesn't make sense. He goes, why don't you slide to the guy that can come? And then my running back can get out in the route. I'm like, I'm thinking, God damn, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm thinking my whole career, we've slid to somebody that couldn't come. Seriously. So say.
Just because nobody told you otherwise.
Because nobody knew, nobody knew otherwise to teach the players that. Like maybe we weren't ready for that in Tampa. I don't know. But we were all pretty intelligent to where we would have picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
To where I know Tony Mayberry was smart enough. That was for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You look over here. We're sliding to that guy. That guy come. That come. Take that guy here. Running back gets out. Now we have more guys in the pass route. So to me, that's very simple things. But it was so elementary for Vinny Testaverde when he got here that everybody knew what the hell we were running. Vinny had all the tools in the world. Okay. But he wasn't equipped, first of all, with personnel around him to win. He wasn't equipped with the knowledge, and the play call sucked. When I ran into Vinny when he was with the Jets at the end of his career, actually it was the end of my career. His career went on for freaking ever. I think it's still going. But Vinny was so knowledgeable that I said, "Man, you're a different football player." And he said to me, "He goes, you don't even need to block your guy. I'm getting the ball out." He goes, when I get to the line, I look around, I goes, I know where the ball is going immediately.
Yep.
Where Vinny used to be, everybody used to confuse Vinny all the time.
Yep.
And this is knowledge, okay? So when you see these young quarterbacks come in there, sometimes the worst thing that can happen is have success early and them think that it's easy, because you see that sometimes where the young quarterback's zinging it around. And the second year, they realize, damn, this is really harder than I thought it was.
Yeah.
And they usually take a step back.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, speaking of quarterbacks, Jameis Winston in the offseason has been very quiet, which is good.
Sure, yeah.
I like when Jameis is quiet. I want to see if Jameis comes out as a different person this year. And I'm going to make that prediction. I think Jameis is going to be a different person this year. Because I think he overstepped his boundaries a little bit last year. And I think he was making it maybe too much about himself. I think he has to take a step back.
I feel like it might have been too much about Jameis Winston since he was drafted.
Might be right.
And I think that was the thing with Gerald McCoy too when he was drafted. And I've never been around a different NFL team, so I don't exactly know how it works, but mm-hmm. The second Jameis Winston was drafted to Tampa Bay, obviously the Florida State in-state connection, you already have a lot of built-in fans, things like that. You know, they knew who Jameis Winston was as a, what I guess would have been like a, you would call in today's age, like a veteran college football leader, because mm-hmm. he played two full seasons at the highest level. Comes into his time in Tampa Bay, and he's a rookie, a 22-year-old rookie, and they've got him as the face, doing all the tweeting, doing all the guy in the mm-hmm. video, making sure that it's his voice that matters and all this stuff. And it's like you said, like this is a 22, 23-year-old kid, whatever, mm-hmm. who's always talking, always, well, what did Jameis say? What did Jameis this? What did Jameis mm-hmm. that? And so I'm kind of with you here. I'm ready for Jameis. And this sounds a little bit harsher than it should, but like I'm ready for Jameis to just shut up.
Thank you.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily anything against Jameis mm-hmm. coming from me. It might be a little bit more from you, but like, I'm just ready for that phase to be over. Mm-hmm. That, hey, the only thing we have going for us is Jameis Winston. So he's got to be talking all the time. We've got to sell the tickets. We've got to get the hype up from the team. And the only way we do that is when Jameis speaks to mm-hmm. us. So now we all have got to hear him talk all the time.
Yeah.
I'm tired of it.
No, I understand. The other voice you hear here is Trevor Sikkema from Peter Report. When I saw Derek Brooks come into the league, I saw John Lynch come into the league, I saw Mike Allstott come into the league, and various guys that ended up being Hall of Famers. When you come in talking, okay, if you don't succeed and don't accomplish anything, it looks hollow, because that word leadership gets thrown around all the time.
Yeah.
I've never heard of a leader, or there being a leader, really, or it doesn't matter, on a losing team. Okay, nobody gasses up the leadership of somebody on a losing team.
Right.
So that's what we've been doing to this point. Okay. So forget about all this leadership bull crap. Stop it. It's going to happen organically. I guarantee it.
Yeah, right. No, it's
guaranteed.
Has to. Like
yes.
You said, it's respect.
Yes.
That's only organic.
That's it. And when you have people around the nation mocking you because you're eating W's, that's not good for anybody. That's not good for him.
Yeah.
It's not good for the Buccaneers who, you know, you become a laughingstock. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Buccaneers have been a laughingstock now for a while.
Yeah.
And we get to the point now where players like, you know, Jameis Winston and Gerald McCoy, Mike Evans, they've just known losing in the league.
Right.
You're going to be, you know, dubbed losers. You guys are making a lot of money, but you guys are losers.
Right, right.
Forget about your statistics. Forget about all that crap. You guys got to figure out a way to win. And the leadership stuff and all that kind of stuff, let it just happen. And pregame speeches, once again, you got to earn stuff.
Yeah.
When I hear Drew Brees do a pregame speech, I get it. He's earned it. He didn't come out that way.
Sure.
He earned it.
You're sure.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, to me, Gerald McCoy hasn't earned anything. Jameis Winston hasn't earned anything.
You know, it was one of the most special times that they've gotten together and done those pregame things? When Levante David did it. You know why? Because he never does it.
He doesn't say anything.
Because he never does it.
Correct.
And so that's why when he was in the middle of the circle doing it, everybody in the press box, I think it was a home game, can't remember what game it was, he got in the middle and did the thing. We were like, yo, that's Levante David. Mm. You know, like, and I'm sure the players, you know, natural instinct to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, just touching on Jameis again really quick, I didn't know, I hadn't been covering the sport long enough, so I didn't really notice it at the time. The whole reason why they wanted to keep Dirk Cutter and make him the head coach was, you know, the familiarity between Jameis Winston. And when we talk about these things now, about certain, you know, him just kind of being able to put his head down, we've heard things since he came in the league of like, well, we want Jameis to be Jameis. You know, we don't want to try to change him too much. And I wonder if pairing him with a first-year head coach or a first-time head coach was a little bit detrimental in this. You know, because if he's got a coach who, I mean, let's say that, like, if they had brought John Gruden in at this time, and John Gruden, obviously, heavily respected name, everything, and he was a guy who was able to be a leader in Jameis's mind, maybe he would have adapted that a little bit better. Because right now, I wonder who says things to Jameis? You know, like, who above him says things? Because right now, Jameis Winston is bigger than Dirk Cutter. He's bigger than Jason Light. He's bigger than the Buccaneers because he's just the only guy that's ever been there. If you have a coach who would have, you know, who had had some, and I'm not saying they should have done this. I'm just saying that in another, you know, like in a parallel universe or something, you've got a guy who can tell him like that he has been there and things like that. Because right now, I just look at Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers, and it's like Jameis Winston is the best thing that they have going on, and he's the best thing that they've had going on since the Super Bowl.
It's just been a while.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, who tells him anything with a commanded respect? I just don't know.
Well,
I'm not saying he's disrespectful to people. I don't know. I'm coming off the right way.
But. I know exactly what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying. It's going back to what I said. Somebody knows what it looks like. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So Jason Light doesn't really know what it looks like. Dirk Cutter's been around, but he's never developed it. You know, it's never been his thing.
Right.
I've always told everybody, Bill Parcells, one of the main things he would always say was, I know what it looks like. And I know what that means.
Yeah.
I know what it looks like means this is a good football team. I know what it looks like means that's not a good enough practice. But, you know, Dirk Cutter, when he's struggling, he's struggling as much as Jameis Winston.
Right, like he's learning too.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, look, man, nothing against him. It's his first time as a head coach.
Yep.
But this
is
just how it goes.
Yep. Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick knows how to react and knows how to get the most out of his football team after a loss. He's done it millions of times.
Yeah.
He knows how to react, and this is sometimes hardest, when your team is winning.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to react.
Mm-hmm.
Some coaches don't know how to react.
Yeah.
Sam Weiss is a great example. We were 3-1 one year, and we were playing Indianapolis that week, and Indianapolis sucked. And Sam Weiss walked off the practice field. And I'm like, where's he going? You guys don't want to win. He walked off the practice field. I was like, okay. So we ended up losing that game and lost 5 games in a row. I'm not blaming him, but that's not professional, is it? Walking off a football field, you know what I mean? So, you know, there's got to be some kind of synergy between the offensive coordinator, head coach, quarterback, and there has to be some kind of knowledge there as well. And I'm going to put Jason Light in it too. They're all learning as they go. They're all learning. Mm-hmm. And they're all struggling too. And I guarantee Jason Light, Dirk Cutter, they have, you know, confidants and people other places in the NFL that they call up when they're having any kind of situation.
Sure, yeah.
And, I mean, you have to utilize that.
I mean, Jason Light, I wrote this in a cover three when I was doing a little bit of recap with a free agency of it. He's in his, what is this, fifth year as a GM, whatever. I think he's just hitting his stride now. And he's in his fifth year. Uh-huh. First couple years, and this is the way that I went back and looked at it. A lot of the GM relationship is like having something with the head coach, yeah, right? Yeah. So he comes in, first-time GM. This is what he was when it was in, I think, 2014 is when he got hired. First-time GM. And he comes in, who's his head coach? Lovie Smith. Yeah. Lovie Smith been around forever. Lovie Smith been to a Super Bowl. You know, like, Lovie Smith done all this. So all of a sudden, there's this weird relationship where it's like, okay, the GM is the one who's supposed to be the drafting and the signing, but he's having a relationship with Lovie Smith. Obviously, Lovie Smith's players that he wanted to bring in didn't do him very well.
Sure.
So he was listening too much to the coach. In 2016, he said that he listened too much to other people. Now, the last draft that he had this year with the free agency signings, he's finally, I think, got his feet wet, and it's why? Because he's failed, and he's learned from it. So, like, that's just part of it. It's like you say, like, with being a rookie, man, you're going to fail. That's why the timing is kind of weird with the Bucs, because it's like first-time franchise quarterback with a first-time head coach with a relatively newer GM. A lot of them are going through the lumps at the same time, and that's often not good.
No, a lot of times it's not good, but then you can think about we're all growing together. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a possibility
as
well.
If it works, you know, you might have longevity for a long time after that.
Maybe there's just not enough knowledge in the organization, period. I mean, we're going to find out this year because they're all going to be gone if they don't win this year.
Right.
If they go 1-3, they're going to be, they might fire them during the season. They go 1-3. If they don't go to playoffs, they're all gone. Every last one of them. Remember, from the front office all the way, every last one of them, and they're going to start revamping this football team and putting some new names and new faces on the side of the stadium, because it's time. If this doesn't work this year, it's clearly time for a change. Dirk Cutter won't be back next year if they don't get to the playoffs.
No.
It actually made me sick to my stomach a little bit what Jason Light said about the expectations being too high, because I hope to hell your expectations are high going into every damn season.
Right.
Every season. If you don't think you're going to the playoffs, then you missed the boat, because free agency is gone. And you could always improve yourself via free agency. The Philadelphia Eagles last year were, I think, 45% built through free agency. Okay. So you can get a football player who you know can play via free agency. So you can build for the future in the draft. But you're not building for this year in the draft, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So, once again, I'm going to applaud the Buccaneers for what they did in free agency, you know, culminating with, you know, JPP and the drafts around the corner. I'm going to hope for the best. I'm going to tell everybody, please don't approach me and ask me what I think about the draft. Please. Please.
You can just direct them my way if you want.
But please, I'm going to send them to go at Trevor Sikkema. He will tell you whatever you think. But, once again, you can have as much knowledge as you can, but you don't know what a rookie's going to do.
True.
It doesn't matter. I mean, how many, you know, when you look at football players in college, man, some of them look amazing. Like, there's a few players that I've seen in college that I would say, well, that guy is just going to be a great football player. But there's not a lot of them. The ones I picked out were J.J. Watt, I think it was right there, Russell Wilson.
Like, okay.
Every year I would pick a player.
Yeah.
And I go, that guy's going to be great.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt I picked 1 year. Russell Wilson, I picked 1 year. Patrick Willis, I picked 1 year. Calvin Johnson, I picked 1 year.
Well,
and there was one other guy. I just go, these guys are just going to be great.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's just everybody else you just don't know. You can have all the physical attributes in the world, but you don't know that they're going to get into the league and be mature enough to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see a player like Johnny Manziel. And I was on, you know, I was on sports radio at the time, and everybody's telling me how great Johnny Manziel is going to be. And I go, does anybody think he's mature enough to play in the NFL? Oh, well, he answer the question. If you're not mature enough to do the right things in college, mm-hmm. you won't be mature enough to make it in the NFL.
Yeah. All you got is more money.
That's it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Which is worse.
Which is worse.
Then you see him, then you see him in the bathroom with rolled up dollar bills and stuff like that.
Right.
Speaking of which, I have to get to Vernon Hargraves, who you saw his Instagram post?
I did.
What is your opinion of that?
yeah. Not great timing.
It's bad timing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just stupid. It's stupid. Not smoking weed.
Right.
Just you had either you or one of your boys or a woman or whoever put on Instagram you were smoking weed. Like, who are you hanging out with?
Yeah,
that's just it's a bad look. Now the Buccaneers have to speak on it. Vernon Hargrave has to speak on it, and it's just not good for anybody in this organization at all. And yeah. You didn't play well last year,
right? It's a lot of people are kind of like freaking out about it. They're like, well, see you, Vernon. I'm like, they're not kicking him off the team.
He's not going anywhere.
No, it was just it was weird. I actually saw that. I wasn't the first one to see it, but I got it got sent to me about 12 hours before people started writing about it. Mm-hmm. And so I saw the video, and I was just like, oh, geez.
So like Adam Schefter. You're like the Adam Schefter.
I saw that video, but the thing was that like I didn't, you know, there's all kinds of, you want to make sure you know what you're reporting and everything like that. So I saw this video, and yeah, it's from an account that the sole purpose of the account on Instagram, now it doesn't exist anymore,
but
the sole purpose of it existing was just to post that video. In fact, they posted it twice on their Instagram and then once on their Instagram story. Just so.
So he didn't do it.
Who?
Vernon Hargrave.
Oh, no. This was, but like you said, this was somebody who was either like one of his boys or somebody
that he
knew.
It was somebody to spite him. Well, you know what? I'm not going to say it's. I'm going to take it off of Vernon Hargrave because you were dumb enough to let somebody videotape you while you were smoking weed.
I think it was him. I think he recorded it.
Really?
I think it's like him.
So
how
did somebody else get it?
That I don't
see. That's
know.
Stupidity.
I don't know.
That's stupidity.
I don't know if he sent it to somebody in a text message and it's like, hey, I don't know if I don't know if like he's texting somebody. He might be texting a girl, sends her like this, like a video of him smoking, like a friend of whoever the girls is, sees it, gets it from him, tries to get some from Hargraves, basically blackmails him. He says, doesn't respond. All of a sudden he posts it. Man, when you got money.
Yeah, man.
You can't
mess with your future money either.
That's
the dumbest video I've
seen.
And
I hate that because it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
But unfortunately for him, it matters.
It does matter. Listen, I am no fuddy-duddy by any means, okay? I ain't scared of weed either. But I'm not dumb. And that was the dumbest video I've seen since Chris Foerster's video. That was the dumbest video I've ever seen. You're going to send a stripper a video of you doing coke at the complex? At the complex, he was doing it between meetings, and he was like,
"It's one of my favorite videos from last year."
You know,
one of my favorite.
You know,
videos.
That's my nemesis, right?
Is it?
Chris Foerster's my nemesis. I was on sports radio for 12 years, bad mouthing Chris Foerster the whole time.
Really?
I mean, he's one of those guys that dogged me out when I left here. I found out he was kicking and screaming. He wanted me to go and this and all this kind of stuff like that. So I hate Chris Foerster, hate him. And when that came up, that made my year. That made my whole year to watch him doing. He was very comfortable doing those lines too. You see how comfortable he was.
Oh, he was confident.
Oh, he was
too.
So yeah. So you're gonna send
in between
a video
lines,
to us?
You know, he's saying something to the girl.
A
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that makes you the dumbest person I've ever really met. Actually,
I've never met him, but yeah, he's up there for me for even dumbest people I've never met.
Yeah, you ain't missing much. All right, last thing, brother. Who are the Bucks pick? Tell me who the Bucks pick at 7.
Gun to my head. You want to know who
head.
I think?
Gun to your head.
Saquon Barkley.
At 7? You think he falls to 7?
Yeah. I also think the draft is starting 4 straight quarterbacks. So I think it goes.
Okay.
I think it goes. Cleveland's going to take Darnold. I think Giants are going to take Rosen. I think the Jets are going to take Josh Allen. I think someone's trading up with Cleveland's second pick, giving them a king's ransom for Mayfield. Because he's the last good one that they want to get, unless they want to take a risk on Lamar Jackson, which I don't really see from the NFL's perspective.
You think Mayfield be a good NFL quarterback?
Not
I.
Yeah.
Not I.
I like him.
Now, I didn't ask you if you like him.
Oh.
I asked you if you think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Those are two different things.
Well.
You see what I'm saying?
Depends where he goes. But I think he has a chance. I think a little bit more of a chance than you do. So then Denver's at five. Okay. They're taking Quentin Nelson. Colts are either trading back or taking Bradley Chubb. Bradley Chubb's still there. I think the Colts stay at six and they take him. So it's either with the Bucs, it's either going to come down to Derwin James or Saquon Barkley. We've talked to them. They love Saquon Barkley.
Let me say this. I don't like running backs in the first round.
Nope.
In the Buccaneers, take them. Take them. Because it's going to cause a splash. It's going to give murmurs. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Now, nobody else in the draft is that sexy. Nobody. He might be the sexiest guy in the draft.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to sell some jerseys now.
Right, right.
There's no doubt about
that.
And we definitely have a need at running back. That's for sure. So, if he's there, I think the Buccaneers have to take him. Just like when the Bucs had number one pick, everybody's like, they're going to take Jameis Winston. He went to Florida State.
Right.
He's right down the street. Right. He's the man. He's never lost. You got to pick him. That's it.
Yeah.
If Saquon Barkley's there at number seven, I think they go with Saquon Barkley. Once again, I would be okay with it, but remember, take heed to what I said as far as a year and a half hamstring, and then it goes that it goes
I'll remember.
Down, it goes downhill for them. Now, Trevor Sikkema, how do people get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you on social media?
I'm biggest on Twitter, at Tampa Bay Trey, T-R-E. That's how you can find me. I interact with a lot of people. That's what I'm constantly on my phone, so that's a blast for me. So follow me on there. We can interact, talk some Bucks football, and then, of course, PeterReport.com. That's where you can find all the stuff that I write.
Beautiful. PeterReport.com. I'm there. They have some great stuff. I know you guys do your homework, and that's what it's all about. So I appreciate you, brother.
No, yeah, thanks for having me.
I appreciate the knowledge because I don't have enough time to be digging up all those college names, and nor do I care. I will be watching the draft somewhere, but definitely not at One Buck Place. Anyways, if you guys want to email me, it's ianbeckles@radioinfluence.com, or you can check me out social media at Ian Beckles, IanBeckles. It's wonderful talking to you guys, and I'm happy that you guys are still listening in the offseason because I still enjoy doing it, and we're going to continue to do it throughout the year. Everybody have a wonderful week, and please be safe. Peace out.
You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Odell Beckham stances, I'm not stepping on the field again until I get a new contract. Well, we know that that's not going to be the case because when the checks start to come in, he'll be there. But he won't be there for the offseason, and he has the right for that. That's, you know, again, more of an indication of his stance. I get it. Players want to get as much out of their contract as they can, and they have a right to do that. What I have said all along as it relates to Odell Beckham, you have to separate things. Let's talk as a football player. He is an elite player in this league. But the reality is he's a game-changing talent. Now, what he has become, he's become a major distraction. There's no doubt about that. The on-the-field distractions, the knucklehead moves, you know, holding out is one issue, but how you conduct yourself, how you act, needs to be exemplary, and it's been far from it.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.